From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It began more than 2 weeks ago in a grim suburb of Paris when two French teenagers of African immigrant families who thought they were being pursued by the police hid in a power station and were electrocuted. A generation of young, disaffected, largely Muslim kids took to the streets. They had no clear leaders, no defined end goals. They were angry about unemployment rates that have reached 50% in some neighborhoods, about government promises not made good, about their exclusion from a society that embraces the French ideal of integration, not multiculturalism, and soon about being called scum. Let's listen to some sounds from the past terrible 2 weeks in France. French Interior Minister Nicolas Sarkozy responding to the rioters.
A certain number of hooligans feel that they can do whatever they like in this country. I would say very simply and very sincerely that they will be held to account.
Nadir Dendene here on the mood right now in the poor suburbs of Paris.
Most of the kids that I know tell me that they have no hope in life, they have no hope with their job. They just think that they are going to turn losers for all their life. So they don't believe in politics, they don't believe in the French system. They are not treated as a French man because of the skin, because of the place that they were raised. So that's why it makes them very, very upset today.
And here, Paris cafe owner Stéphanie Vedoux.
I think the government should take stronger action to stop the riots, to show that these people have no right to do what they're doing. Why are they burning schools and attacking firemen? They are endangering the lives of their own relatives as well. It's totally ridiculous. This isn't a matter of integration. They don't seem to want to be integrated. I've heard young people like them saying, I've got my French papers, but screw the French.
Today, about 10% of France's population is Muslim. They are France's underclass. A state of emergency, curfews, the threat of deportation, and maybe exhaustion have begun to quiet the dark rage that surfaced in the last 2 weeks, but the rage is still there. With a message for France and Europe and perhaps for America, this hour On Point, the meltdown in France and what it means, you can join the conversation. How are you interpreting the news from Paris? How do you understand the motivation of young men rampaging through the poor suburbs of France? What can America learn or offer here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin in Paris, where President Jacques Chirac, for the first time yesterday, addressed the backdrop to the rioting, saying that France has undeniable problems in its poor neighborhoods. Last night, the 15th consecutive night of violence, rioters burned more than 400 cars. Christopher Dickey is Paris bureau chief for Newsweek magazine and joins me now. Christopher, thank you for being with us. Is it over yet?
Well, it certainly is ending. All the trend lines suggest that the violence is declining, and we're going back to what is thought of as normal violence in these neighborhoods, in these housing projects, these outer city ghettos. In Seine-Saint-Denis, the area where all this began, yesterday it was announced that only 15 cars were burned, and that was perfectly normal for Saint-Denis in one night. So that gives you an idea of where things stand, I think.
Christopher, as the fires come down, is there a common, a universal understanding in France of what we've just witnessed here and the reasons behind it, or not?
Well, there's sort of the understanding that was always there. It's known that these parts of the country, these neighborhoods, these projects are full of people who have not been well integrated into French life. The question comes with how do you do a better job of integrating them into French life? And I don't think that any really solid answers have been found. Jobs programs are being begun as they were begun before. There's talk about reinstituting programs which existed before with neighborhood police, perhaps, or with more funding for social workers. But it doesn't address the central problem, which is that the second and third generation of children of immigrants who are, in many cases, Muslim or and Arab and or black, just doesn't feel that it has the same rights as Frenchmen. But French society says to them, we're not going to address you in a special way because everybody's equal in this country. And it's a terrible sort of catch-22 that keeps them stuck in these ghettos and angry and encourages these outbreaks of violence, which in fact happen every few years, although not quite as to the extent that we've seen in the last 2 weeks.
Christopher Dickey, talk to us about this French idea or ideal of integration. It seems to mean something different than the American ideal. Is it multiculturalism? Is it integration? Is it drop your headscarf and become the beret and baguette Frenchman? Is that possible for a North African Muslim?
Well, yes, it is for some. The idea is that this is a republic where there are certain values and standards that everybody has to abide by. You are supposed to learn French. You are supposed to be integrated and assimilated into French society. You are supposed to understand its history and its laws. And you are supposed to become part of all that. And the deal is that if you do, then French society is supposed to be completely colorblind. In fact, the laws are colorblind, so much so that no records are kept officially of the religious background or the ethnic background of French citizens. So it's impossible for us to say, for instance, how many French citizens are of Muslim or Arab or African background, because those records cannot be kept legally. That would be great if French society were on the same page as French law, but it's not. So what happens is black or Arab kids go to get jobs. They have Arab names or African names.
Yep.
They come from these neighborhoods, and they discover that people won't even talk to them about giving them jobs. Often, if they submit the same resumes with a French-sounding name, they get the interviews. So it's a very ugly sort of scene, and it's a trap for French society as well as for these kids.
Seems like a really tough trap of prejudice, ideals, and racism all in there. How does France get out of this? They've got an economic backdrop to this, which is really grim for all the French. Very high unemployment, extraordinarily high among exactly these populations. Do you think that this 2 weeks of rioting is going to sort of shake the French into some new understanding of their circumstance, into some major change? And is it toward a backlash or toward something else?
There's certainly going to be a backlash. I think it's going to be harder, at least in the short term, for a lot of those kids from those neighborhoods to get jobs than it was before, which is certainly bad news. I think the state is going to try to intervene with more programs, but I don't think that's going to work. There are certain things that the French might be able to do that would encourage and allow people to get out of these ghettos more effectively. This is a terrible environment for entrepreneurs, for instance, because of all kinds of regulations and taxes. And this is not generally a society that respects or supports entrepreneurial activity. So as a result, it's very difficult for a lot of these kids to become, say, hairdressers or owners of small businesses and work their way out that way. There is some of that, but not nearly enough.
Political fallout from this 2 weeks of rioting? Is anyone going to fall? Where's it go?
It doesn't look like anybody's going to fall right away. Certainly, the general feeling is that Sarkozy, the interior minister, has not done a great job, that he helped to incite the riots, that now they are kind of burning themselves out, that the strong measures were taken by the government led by Dominique de Villepin, the prime minister, and that those may have been effective, but that Sarkozy's approach was not particularly good. On the other hand, he does have support on the right. His tough language, which inflamed the rioters,
scum,
in the early days, is also something that is music to the ears of the far right in France.
All right, what a picture. Christopher Dickey in Paris with Newsweek magazine. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I want to turn now, also in Paris, to Olivier Roy. He's research director at the French National Center for Scientific Research. His op-ed piece, Get French or Die Trying, appeared in Wednesday's New York Times. Mr. Roy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
What do you mean, get French or die trying? Is that still the message that the French society is giving to these young people? Become the classic Frenchman or you're out of luck?
Yes, for two reasons. First, I would say it's part of the traditional political culture of France, you know. to be a full citizen, some sort of a political identity, and not any identity based on ethnicity, religion, region, or things like that. But the other issue is that there is no alternative, you know. Which sort of other identity could we grant to this youth? Themselves are, in fact, very far from the culture of their parents. Let's take the language, for example. They speak French, you know, at least the guys of the second generation. They do not speak Arabic anymore, nor the dialect of North Africa. They are not particularly Muslims in the way of life. They share, I would say, the Western youth street culture, you know, in terms of clothing, hoods, music, fast food, and things like that. So, in fact, the answer to these problems have to be political answer.
Do you agree with the charge from these neighborhoods that when they try to become French, they're faced with French racism that cuts them off from that path?
Yeah, and as Dick said, it's true that the laws are colorblind, but the people are not. So we have a double exclusion. One is social and economic, and the other is racial, you know. It's not just a matter of the color of the skin, because we have successful Arabs and Muslims in the middle class. It's also, I would say, a matter of a social identity. They speak, for example, with some sort of a slang, which is immediately identifiable. So when these guys with their slang, their street clothing, and so on, so go to find a job, they are very often rejected just because they are coming from this neighborhood.
And of course, there is the color of the skin. Olivier Roy in Paris, please stand by. We've got many more voices coming up. Listeners, you can join us. We're talking about the meltdown we've seen in France, the state of emergency, and the alienated French, immigrant, Muslim, underclass. What do you see in the fires of France? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the meltdown in France, the state of emergency, and all the rest. You've seen it. Olivier Roy joins us from Paris. He is research director at the French National Center for Scientific Research. We're going to hear in a few minutes as well from Tariq Ramadan, one of Europe's most influential and provocative Muslim thinkers. Jack Beattie will be with us as well. You can join this conversation. How do you understand the motivations of the young men rampaging in the suburbs of Paris and beyond? Is this an economic problem, a problem of racism, a problem of religion? Is this a problem with the French style of integration? In American terms, is France integrated? And I guess, is there a lesson here for America, or is this a uniquely French, uniquely European crisis? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Olivier Roy has joined us from Paris right now from Hanover, Hampshire. Jack Beattie's On Point news analyst and senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly is with us. Jack, you've been watching Paris as well. What do you see in the light of these fires?
Well, I was thinking that there are some lessons that America could give to the French. And, of course, any American speaking about social cohesion and disorganization in this country is always talking about something that could change tomorrow. We have had all sorts of urban disorders. We could have more.
And we have plenty of our own segregation in its own style.
Absolutely, absolutely. But something has happened in this country in the last generation in regard to our model of assimilation. Really, up until about 1970, the American ideal was the melting pot. Indeed, the image was first given us by a French aristocrat in the 18th century, Saint Jean Crevecoeur, who said that what then is the American, this new man? Here, individuals of all nations are melted into a new race of men. That was the idea. Florian Zenicki, the turn-of-the-century sociologist, spoke of Americanization as the euthanasia of memories. People come over here from other countries, they're melted into this new man, and we have that's assimilation. But in fact, assimilation, as Moynihan and Glaser pointed out years ago, never happened. We had something else. We had an amalgam. Ethnic identities were formed. And really, since the since the immigrations of the 60s, when large-scale Hispanic immigration became the norm, we have gone toward a multicultural ideal of assimilation. You sort of become American by becoming a little bit more of what you were. Through the schools, multiculturalism has swept the schools. According to one study of the 50 leading American universities, not one requires an American history course to graduate. More kids know who Sojourner Truth is than George Washington, that sort of thing. So we have gone in a direction that sort of says to minority, well, it's okay to be separate and you can be in your ethnic community and yet still be an American, because Americanism doesn't require some cultural ethnic amalgam. It's enough to just obey the laws, to believe in the general principles of American democracy. Bill Clinton has said that perhaps we're having a third great revolution, one that will, quote, prove we can live without having a dominant European culture. Well, we're in that moment of multiculturalism, of redefining ourselves, and we're sort of looking at the French and saying, maybe this is the way you need to go.
A looser ideal.
A looser ideal where you don't try to create this essence of the French man or woman. It's enough to obey the laws. You relate to the larger community through your little platoon, through your ethnic identity.
I want to get Olivier Roy's response to that, but if I may first turn, also in Paris, to Dominique Moisy. He's deputy director of the French Institute of International Relations, professor at the Institute of Political Studies in Paris, a columnist for the Financial Times and other European newspapers. Mr. Moisy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
You hear Jack Beattie saying maybe the looser American multicultural ideal that has emerged would be helpful for France. Is that an option for France?
I think the problem is not the French model versus the American model. The problem, to my mind, is the inadequation, the divorce between the principles which are defended by France and the realities that developed in the suburbs and the poor ghettos. And what happened is that the very high level of unemployment, the very poor urban planning, the deterioration of the education system, failure to France to continue to integrate successfully because it had lost the tools for integration, came at a time when the most difficult people were to integrate. And so it's not the principles of France that are, of the French model, that are the problem. It's the fact that the application cannot be sustained in the present context with such a high level of unemployment. Again, it's the divorce between principles and realities on the ground.
The failure, perhaps, to live up to those principles. And you write about, in France and across Europe, this new domination of fear over hope being a kind of paralyzing dynamic that's emerging here when it comes to dealing with these immigrant problems, underclass problems.
Yes, I wrote about the domination of fear over hope because I'm struck by the feeling that Europeans globally are afraid of the future. And this is something which in our global age diverged completely with the majority of Asians or even Americans. I think if you are in China, if you are in India, you have a sense that you were born at the right time and that your children are going to do better than you did yourself. In Europe, it is the reverse. You have the feeling that your children are going to do much worse than you did yourself and that the future is going to be of a darker shade of gray than the one you went through.
Olivier Roy, Dominique Moisy is describing a Europe, a France, in which people see yesterday as better than today, the past is better than the present, and the present is likely better than the future. So do you agree? Is there that kind of umbrella of fear here? And if so, how does France break through to deal with its large immigrant population from a posture of fear?
Yes, there is a perception of an uncertain future in Europe in general and in France in particular. I think it has a lot to do with the crisis of the traditional political models because of the European integration. This integration is not working very well, but it works, you know, and the nation states are losing slowly their prerogatives. On the other hand, there is a demand for a strong state, not only in France, but in most of the continental European countries. They want a welfare state, they want the state to provide, you know, for the basic services and to intervene as soon as there is a crisis. So the idea of people living in separate communities and so doesn't work, you know. These youth, for example, they protest because they consider that the state is doing nothing for them. They want the state to do something. So people are waiting for a strong state at a time where all the states here are becoming weaker and weaker.
States becoming weaker. Dominique Moisy, some in the United States, in conservative circles, neoconservative circles, have seen what's happened in the last 2 weeks as a push of Islamofascism, of a kind of extension of Al-Qaeda violence and Iraq violence. Do you see that?
Not at all. I think this is an absurd vision. It could become that scenario, but if really things were to deteriorate. Right now, these people, these young people who are throwing stones, rocks, burning cars, they are destroying in order to exist for the first time in the eyes of the French authority. They feel neglected, they feel that they live in ghettos, they have a sense of total solitude, alienation. And I think this rebellion is much more to be understood in Marxist term. They are, in a way, the new proletariat of the 21st century and not the Al-Qaeda, Arabia branch of the fantasies of the neoconservative in America.
Mm-hmm. And you would say an angry underclass right now in the midst of a Europe full of self-doubt about its own identity and about its own capacity to succeed, to perform. Dominique Moisy, Olivier Roy, Jack Beatty, please stand by. I want to begin to bring our callers into this conversation, if I may. Jose is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Jose. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to say something about the riots in France.
Yes.
It seems to me those people that overturned the cars, they weren't treated properly. I don't condone the violence. I don't condone violence at all. I don't condone them overturning and blowing up cars and buildings and all that.
But are you sympathetic? Why?
Because I just don't think they've been treated properly. I mean, they like the man said, they go for a job and can't get it because they have a African or Muslim sounding name, and
mm-hmm.
the France is not making them feel inclusive. And if you don't invest in all your people, you know, invest in your poverty stricken people, and if do something to make them feel inclusive or comfortable,
mm-hmm.
then eventually they're going to get frustrated and do some uncomfortable things.
Jose, let me ask you: do you think America performs better on this front or not when you see what's going on in France?
Well, we've faced some of this ourselves. Back in the '60s, we had riots too. But I think America's tried to reach out and help people, but these conservatives that you know in office now want to make deep cuts in all kind of social programs and help the poor. And if they get away with that, if they're allowed to get away with it, we might have some rioting over here too.
Could come right back home, Jose. Thank you for your call. Dominique Moisy, where do you see French politics turning in the wake of these riots, if indeed they're over, toward backlash and a more conservative French political profile or toward voices that want more inclusion, more integration, more outreach?
Well, clearly I would favor the second alternative, and I hope it will come. I hope people will understand that the return of security means a change in the social order that led to insecurity. If we say, clean the streets, let's have law and order, and if nothing is changed, insecurity will return in a few months, in a few years. It should be a moment of rethinking our priorities. What have we done wrong? Why has fraternity disappeared from our society? Why has our political class so irrelevant to the nature of the problems? I mean, when you see in the midst of the violence in the suburbs, the way the Socialist Party behaves, jockeying for position, if you see the competition within the government between Sarkozy and Villepin, there is a growing divorce between the importance of the problems France and globally Europe is facing and the way political leaders are answering those problems.
Olivier Roy, do you think the French, and I guess in this case I mean white French people, are prepared to get past race and their traditional identity to open up to this population, to really invite them into jobs and to an inclusive status in France, or more likely to retreat and become defensive?
I think that the idea that it's too late now to retreat, that we have, you know, to head towards a more complex and diverse society is already accepted by the majority of the population. But in fact, you know, the picture is more complex than that. You have many intermarriages. You have many Muslims living, you know, in non-Muslim neighborhoods among the traditional French middle class and so on. So the problem is specifically now with the underclass. And given the economic situation, it's very difficult, you know, to deal with this problem of the underclass, except by subsidizing social services, welfare state, and things like that. So it costs a lot of money. But how to deal with the underclass, for me, is now one of the big challenges of the Western world, and not only France.
Marie's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Marie, you're on the air. What do you think?
How are you? Well, I have lived in France, and I've also visited there a great many times. And I think one of the difficulties that I have seen is something that I've also seen in America. I think when the white French, and that's the only way I can put it, the white French say, well, you must adapt our ways. You must not only, of course, speak French. You must adapt, you know.
The whole package.
As a French person, and these younger people are French. I mean, they are born there. They had probably, like one of your other speakers said, had less and less to do with, you know, maybe their background. Maybe they don't even speak Arabic or whatever other languages their parents may speak. And they are French. And I think that the younger people feel that. But I do not think, from what I have seen and witnessed myself, that they, that the older generation, let's say, will accept them. It doesn't matter what Americans seem to think that we have maybe some little difficulties when we go there because we don't speak the language.
Yep.
Well, I know that that's not true. There are people here, who speak French fluently. They're born there.
So you're saying maybe the French need to expand their definition of what it means to be French.
I think when they're saying, and I'm not a French person, I'm American, but from what I have witnessed and seen, the only thing I can say is to be French, I believe, they are talking about to be white and French.
I don't know who the they is. It's not our guest today, but maybe at some level in the general population.
General population. I've heard little remarks made in bake shops about, well, if these people would just move away from here, or, you know, just little remarks that I've overheard.
No, we've got it, Marie. Our time is short before the break, but thank you for calling. Jack Beattie, you can hear the tension here. Dominique Moisy, Olivier Roy want to say, we should embrace our French ideals more tightly, and yet there's a kind of insularity or racial shell there that makes that a difficult solution.
Yes, and I think part of the problem, or at least, again, there's one wholly innocent of the French facts, but just looking at the outside, does seem to be in that model, I mean, of integration, that the French recognize individuals. They don't recognize groups, and they don't recognize the discrimination that groups face with positive discrimination. They don't have affirmative action, for example. They don't, in the words of Harry Blackmun defending affirmative action, they don't take race into account in order to get beyond race. Mm. That's the process we're involved in.
Somewhere on that trail, and poor France in these last 2 weeks. Dominique Moisy, Olivier Roy, please stand by. We're talking about the meltdown in France. How does Europe get out of this bind? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital, for more than 60 years helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the meltdown in France, the state of emergency, and the alienated French immigrant Muslim underclass. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We've been joined from Paris by Olivier Roy, research director at the French National Center for Scientific Research, by Dominique Moisy, deputy director of the French Institute for International Relations. And now we are joined from Paris as well by Tariq Ramadan, visiting professor at Oxford University, one of Europe's most influential and provocative Muslim thinkers, author of Western Muslims and the Future of Islam. You may have heard his name a couple of years back when he was denied entrance to the United States to teach at Notre Dame. He's the grandson of Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Radical Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Tariq Ramadan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for your invitation.
Mr. Ramadan, what do you see in the riots of these last 2 weeks?
I think that what we have to say, it's really that what is going on now in the French society is clearly not linked to any kind of, you know, connection with religion, with Islam, with the fact that the suburbs are mainly in majority Muslims, people who are living there. I think that we are facing a very deep social crisis. And for generations now, we were obsessed by speaking in France about identity, laïcité, secularism, as if everything about integration was going to be solved by speaking about the structure, the legal issues, mm-hmm. and identities. And now all these young French citizens are reminding the country that the main problems are social, that they are facing unemployment, they are facing segregation, they are facing discrimination and racism. So really this is the main point, and we don't have to connect that with religious issues.
Is French society, in your view, ready to address these problems, even when fires are burning every night? Or is this going to get worse before it gets better, Tariq Ramadan?
You know, for the last 15 years, and I wrote, you know, about Muslims in secular societies in the first book was in 1992, saying that really Islam is not the problem. We need, of course, to stop violence. So violence is not the solution, and riots are not going to solve the problem. But, you know, just look at what is the general discourse and the political discourse now. You don't even have the feeling that they are listening to what these citizens are saying. We still speak about French immigrant backgrounds. We still speak about integration and not about real issues, which kind of policy do we need now? Social policy to change the situation. So to speak only about security and to send police insulting and even the interior minister insulting the scum because he doesn't show respect, I think it's not the solution. So on both sides, we have to be clear. We have to say to all the citizens, stop violence and make clear claims and try to at least be committed at the local level. But we really need an intellectual revolution within the political parties, tackling the issues by respecting the people and saying clearly that they are dealing with French citizens and they are right when they ask for justice and equal rights and equal citizenship. This is what we need to hear. And sometimes when we made mistakes, just to recognize that these were mistakes and to apologize, which was not made by the interior minister.
So do you think that French citizens, white French citizens, are dreaming of the past? You know the demographics. Dominique Moisy and Olivier Roy have referenced them. In another generation, in two and three, all of Europe, France will be more brown and more Muslim. Is there a fear, a paralyzing fear here?
Of course. The main issue, in fact, is all about fear. Is that we are nurturing this fear about, you know, who they are, what do they want. We are saying sometimes about the, you know, immigrants and even Muslims, things that were said about the Jews in the 30s in our continent. You know, we don't trust them. They have a double talk. They have a double loyalty. They are not real and true when they say that they are citizens, and they are infiltrating the society and colonizing it slowly but surely. We have to stop this kind of discourse. What we need to come to is a better understanding that now Islam is a European religion, that we have European Muslims that are Europeans by culture, they are Muslim by religion and Democrats by their political involvement, and that we have to build the future like that. But to build the future as something which is threatening the homogeneous European white culture is just nurturing racism and xenophobia. I think that, yes, the future will be more and more mixing as to the cultures and as to the reality. But what we need for the future is common good, it's common values, common universal values, and work together.
Dominique Moisy, how about it? Tariq Ramadan says, let's be finished with this debate about whether Islam is compatible with French Republican values. Is that debate over? Should it be over, or is there still an open question there?
No, I think the debate should be over, and I agree with Tariq Ramadan. The problem is that not all persons speaking in the name of Islam speak with the same clarity, the same moderation than Tariq Ramadan himself. There are sometimes very ambiguous declaration which can give suspicions and nourish a feeling of fear, which again, I repeat, must be transcended and rejected. But it is a reality. So somewhere we have to be very prudent in our use of words, prudent in our action. To be a European implies a certain number of principles. One of them is clearly in foreign policy, recognizing the right of Israel to exist. This is something all European countries have recognized fully. It's one of the bases of the international system as seen by Europe. And sometimes you can understand the emotions, you can condemn the Israeli policy, and I do so myself very, very often. But there is a sense of legitimacy, which is very important in the absolute and clear recognition of the right of Israel to exist.
Why do you raise this issue?
You don't see.
Why do you raise the issue of Israel's existence in this conversation? Enlighten us.
Because somewhere it is an issue that has been raised previously in the suburbs and in the explosions that took place. I mean, the kind of comparison with the Intifada, which has been made very often, is at the same time wrong and not completely unjustified. But in many ways, I think if the young people from the ghettos in the suburbs of Paris feel that they are treated by French society, by French police, like Palestinians are treated by Israelis, it shows a level of alienation, a level of frustration that must be remedied and that must be treated. But at the same time, if the people that are demonstrating in the streets are saying, well, we don't want to accept the international order as it is. Mm. It is preoccupying. It is a source of tension because it's not what Europe stands for.
At least today. Patrick is calling from Boston. Hello, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about a man named Jacques Attali. He was an economic advisor to President Mitterrand mm-hmm. and also President Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book called Millennium, Winners and Losers in the Coming World Order.
Okay, what should we think?
He talked about the split in not just French society, but any capitalist society. And I loved how one of your guests said this is the new proletariat. The problem is the economic model that we have creates this disparity between rich and poor, and it's exacerbated by racism, by sexism, by all the isms.
But Patrick, let me ask you, if I may, you have American critics now pointing to France and saying, France, your problem is you're not capitalist enough. So you have a sluggish, lousy economy, not enough new jobs created. There's no way you can integrate all these people with that system.
Well, you know, we can't say that in America because there's a big problems here, too. Go to Detroit and talk to people who work for General Motors and see what they say about the beautiful American system. But that's not the issue.
Yes, yes.
More or less, capitalism leads to this disparity, which gets exaggerated, and it causes, you know, because there is not enough economy to support everyone, then you get the problems of race, you get the problems of everything else. But those are symptoms. They are not the disease. The disease is the economic model creates a disparity between rich and poor,
yeah.
And it gets exacerbated.
Well, there's a perspective, and we've got it, Patrick. Olivier Roy, how about it? The suggestion from many in America is the opposite, that France needs a more vibrant, entrepreneurial, less social welfare-laden economy if it's going to have enough dynamism to grow out of this trap, as Dominique Mosey describes it. What do you think?
Well, you know, welfare state is part of the continental European culture. And precisely these youth, they want more welfare state in a sense. So I think that the phenomenon of globalization, of more economic liberalism, is part of what the people are afraid of in France.
But the economy that you've got in France, the economy you've got is not producing enough jobs. I take Patrick's point about poverty remaining in the United States. We've seen it, yet the U.S. economy has produced a lot more jobs one way and another.
Yeah, but it's not just a matter to change an economic system for a more efficient one. An economic system is always linked with political culture, tradition, history, government, and things like that. So it's a whole change. And as Dominique Moisy said, you know, people here are quite afraid of a change.
Mm. Tariq Ramadan, what do you see in this European future? Could this come to a crisis, a real backlash, where Muslims, I don't know, are sent out of Europe by their millions? Or is Europe going to evolve into something much more rainbow-like, multicultural-like? How do you see the future?
I'm more optimistic. I think that we are going through something I perceive as a transitory period and natural tensions, because we are realizing in Europe that Europe is changing. It's not easy for what we call the indigenous white Europeans just to look at their own society and realizing that these societies and the culturally speaking are changing. At the same time, I am dealing at the grassroots with Muslim communities, and they are experiencing what I call a silent and constructive revolution in the way they think about their own Islamic references, the perception of the European environment, and they are moving very fast. I agree with what was said. We have to be very cautious not to idealize the picture. We have some Islamic discourse that are radicals, and we have to say that this is not Islamic, and we have to work from within the Muslim communities. But on the long run, I really think that we have a move there where European citizens, Muslims, and are at the same time coming from Asia or North Africa and now settling in Europe, are going to be part of Europe. And at the same time, I really see coming from the youth that they are more connected to this international and pluralistic perception of their own identities and the future. So we have to build on that. But there is one thing that I want to say is that we can be obsessed by the extremism of the other. For example, the Muslims can just nurture this sense of victimhood, thinking that the far-right parties and the radical, you know, views in Europe or in the West are gaining strength, and that the perception is that the only thing that will happen is that they are going to be rejected. On the other side, we have Westerners. They can be obsessed with these Islamic voices saying that the West is the enemy. And so if we are obsessed by the extremists of the other side, both extremism are going to win.
Let me get one more call, if I may. Our time is growing short here. Alan is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Alan, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you? I think it's too late for France. They don't radically change their economic structure immediately. France, within 40 or 50 years, will be 50 to 70% Islamic, and will be the first Islamic country in Western Europe. And you see major white flight from France to other countries.
What does the economic system do with the demographic profile, Alan? What's the connection?
It's like everybody's on welfare there. There's no real incentive to work. You know, Bill Clinton, you know, eliminated a lot of welfare and back-to-work programs, and France should have intensive education and training and vocational training, electricians, plumbers.
Yeah, of course, they scarcely have the jobs. We've got your point, Dominique Moisy. What about the economic structure behind all this conversation? We've heard opposite views there from our callers. Can France's welfare state float the society through the changes it needs to make to get out of the bind it's in?
Well, I think this is the essence of contradiction. People want to be protected by the state, but it's only private enterprise that in the long run will create the dynamism which will then lead to job creation. And I think the last question which was asked was a bit caricatural. Mm. I mean, there are more jobs in the United States depending upon the dynamism of French firms present in the United States that there are French job depending in France from American firms. So in a way, the French economy is much more dynamic. The French entrepreneur is much more dynamic than, I would say, the French political leaders. The problem is the growing gap between the quality of economic leaders and the low quality of political leadership.
Of course, when politics are in such a deep bind, there may not be many who are up to it, who can step up and address such a bind. Dominique Moisy and Olivier Roy, we're so grateful to both of you. Dominique Moisy at the French Institute of International Relations, thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And Olivier Roy at the French National Center for Scientific Research, author of Globalized Islam. Mr. Roy, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Tariq Ramadan's line has dropped on us, but he was with us as well from Paris, author of Western Muslims and the Future of Islam. Jack, look over this scene with me. Dominique Moisy in particular paints a really tough picture. He said, you know, the Europeans, French, are tempted to cling to the status quo. On the other hand, because it's what they've known and what they love. On the other hand, growing with awareness that everything has to change if they want to protect what Europe, what France has achieved.
Yes, and for them, globalization, it must, for many, it feels like the enemy is within. You know, they've had immigration without assimilation, and that hasn't worked. And that has led even the people who are excluded to feel the enemy, to feel as if they are the enemy. Mm-hmm. So they're really at a crisis point, it seems to me, in redefining how to deal with the world within their borders.
An incredible drama playing out across the Atlantic. Jack, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.